This is your go-to podcast dedicated to getting the exclusive scoop from the industry's top influencers that are helping to shape the cybersecurity, audit, and IT governance landscape. Tune in as we dig deep and learn their motivators, explore their industry journey, and investigate their ideas and predictions on what the future holds. This is Isaka's Cyber Pros. Welcome to the show. And now, your Cyber Pros, Dustin Brewer and Frank Downs.
So last week, Dustin and I were talking, as we do, about cybersecurity things, which is way too often the topic. And what was interesting was I was complaining to him about something that a lot of people complain about. And probably one thing that you can almost guarantee everyone that has either been in IT or cyber or even just uses a computer in life, in an office or at home, will complain about, that's the printer.
Do we even need them anymore? That's the big question.
Yeah, I get angry when I have to use it. It's like a fax machine when they're like, you can fax to this number, and I can be like, I left my fax machine in 1999. Sorry. And then you always try to find those websites that are like, no, just scan and send here and we'll fax it for you. I'm like, no thanks, third party. That's suspicious.
Yeah, real quick, actually, sorry, and I don't mean to derail us here, but it really bothers me that people think that a fax machine is more cyber secure than a secure email or an encrypted file. I don't know where that
You've heard this? People have said this with their words?
Anytime you do anything with healthcare in the United States anyways, you fax it, right? Anytime you do anything, I know this, with the state of Maryland, usually you're faxing something. And you can attest to that. The state of Florida is a little more advanced in that. You can kind of email things every once in a while. But some places require fax, and some places require it because of HIPAA compliance is what they say, and I don't quite understand that. But anyway,
people are still using it too, by the way, here in Maryland. They did a breakdown of what was it for the mail-in votes, the different way people voted in and everything. And then they counted down, you know, several hundred thousand in person, several hundred thousand by mail, you know, several hundred thousand by the Dropbox. And then there were like 50 by fax. 50 people were faxing in their ballots to the elections board. And
so if any of our listeners out there can explain to myself and Frank how a fax machine or faxes are more secure, I'd love to hear. I love it because we might be overlooking something we don't know. So we'd love to hear.
I'll be the first to say I'm wrong about fax machines. I'll even make that like my LinkedIn little phrase right there, right? Frank Downs was wrong about fax machines. So something that everyone's always complaining about is printers, right? If it's not because, you know, low on cyan, so I can't print anything else. There's a meme out there on the internet about that where it's like, no, I don't care if you only want to print in black and white. You have no cyan. I'm not printing, right? To any other type of complaint where it always gets jammed, right? Well, I had a very similar issue. And speaking of the state of Maryland, wow, it all comes together, Dustin. I got my temporary tags. I had to renew my registration for my vehicle. And it was, when you do that, you get a temporary tag thing that you can print out in Maryland and you put in the back of your window and theoretically you don't get pulled over. Anyway, my printer wouldn't print it, and it wouldn't print it, and it wouldn't print it, and it wouldn't print it. And well, so that was frustrating, but my family was the first trip I was taking my family out of town on in a year and a half, thanks to the pandemic. So I wasn't going to miss taking my family to a cabin in the woods, which sounds super sketch when I say it like that. no hockey masks, though, so we were okay. So I left it for the weekend, came back, and then it was the next Monday morning where I was like, I'm going to print this thing because I felt like I got away with, you know, by the skin of my teeth from not getting pulled over. Come to find out, I took a look at it and I said, man, this thing is on, but I noticed that there was no connectivity between the device and the actual, switch, and the switch. I keep my printer hardwired to my network because the only thing worse than having a printer is having a wireless printer, because it will always work sometimes and always flood your network with broadcast packets, which Justin and I have experienced on more than one occasion. Always broadcasting. Anyway, I took a look at the device. I saw that there was no connectivity between it. So what I did was there was like a special, it was like Sonic the Hedgehog combination that you could press on the printer with the buttons, only instead of getting like to the end and fighting Dr. Robotnik, it gave me some very boring network information printed out on a piece of paper. And it said, hey, your IP is manually assigned. First of all, no, I didn't. No, I didn't do that. Not for my printer. To a random IP address. And then it said, your gateway, by the way, is 10 dot something dot something dot something dot something, which I was like, oh, that's stressful. And then it said, and your DNS IP address. I said, uh-oh, no, you don't need that printer. Is 10, the exact same thing. So I've got this thing connected to a random gateway, which makes kind of sense. And it showed me how many packets had been going out, but thanks, I guess. To these addresses and how many had been received, which neither of those were zero, by the way. So really uncomfortable. And then all the ports were open, which can make some sense if you've got it behind the firewall. It's like, yeah, you can use FTP to send, you know, some of them have FTP servers for if you want to print in the most arcane way I can think of. And then as well as web server ports were open, which makes sense for administration, though. And then you also had a mail server on it, which I was like, that's a whole feature I didn't want. Anyway, nothing had been updated since 2013. Thanks, printer company, whose names I'm not going to mention. No updates since 2013. And on top of it, something that was buried in the user manual, which of course I didn't read, was the default admin credentials for this device that was publicly accessible. Why? Because I sure didn't keep my manual from 2012 when I bought it, and had to go find it online. And it reminded me what Dustin and I were talking about. This is the second time I've experienced something like this, only in an inverse problem. The first time was I had an Asus router that got updated automatically by Asus, or is it Asus? Which do you say? Is it Asus or Asus? And which is the right way?
I say Asus.
Asus. Yeah. And then that update left the FTP port open, so someone from 4chan created a script to troll everyone where they could find it and then leave a message. This was the second time where probably it's the inverse problem. There were no updates to this printer. And as a result, the old authentication method with the client, administrator access default creds were still available for anyone to get. And it made me livid because my job's cyber. And fixing it was, well, I guess I'll just update the IP address and change the default creds and turn off every other port that is there. So, yeah, and then Dustin reminded me, this isn't the first time we've seen this, and that this is kind of a big trend that we're seeing in IoT.
That's right. So when we think about printers, we usually don't think about IoT devices, right? Printers are... just peripherals. Usually, like traditionally, that's what they were, right? Since semiconductors different types of and chipsets have become so cheap, they really try to build as much as they can into a printer, pretty much turning it into an IoT device that also can print, right? So it can have a web server on it, like Frank said. It can have an FTP server. It has some kind of an operating system on it for the most part, and all of these devices are basically mini computers, right? IoT devices are basically mini computers. Sometimes they're not so mini, sometimes they're big computers, right? Depending on the IoT device that we're talking about. If we're talking about industrial IoT or something along those lines, then we're talking about maybe a little bit bigger of a controller. But for the most part, we're talking about these miniaturized computers that are going into things, right? The Internet of Things, right? They're going into light bulbs. They're going into all these other aspects. And I know we've talked about IoT before, but it seems like it doesn't matter how much we talk about it.
It's not changing.
It doesn't. And Frank brings up a really good point. He's a cyber professional. I'm a cyber professional as well. And we still make mistakes, right? Because we're not always thinking about things that way. We have a printer, I guess, out of necessity, maybe not.
I don't even want this printer. You're right.
Right. Yeah.
I don't even like it.
Right. No millennials want a printer. Right. But I don't even know what Gen Z is. You can't just like text it to me. I don't even know what they would text us. That's probably too old. Like you can't just WhatsApp it to me, or I don't know what they say. Anyway, the point is that printers are kind of becoming an antiquated technology. But we still have this weird necessity for them. And we talked about fax machines before. It's the same thing with that, right? We still have these, like, and then we all have to drive to Kinko's or fax it from our offices. Because none of us have home fax machines, that's asinine. I think printers are kind of headed the same way, as we have some, I have some younger employees on my team, and I did have to have them print something out recently, and they both had to go to Kinko's because neither one of them owned a printer. And I totally get it. I do. But again, going back to this, we tend to think of these printers as just peripherals. However, with all the functionality that we require with them now, where if you go and you buy a printer, you want Wi-Fi, you want the ability to print from anywhere. You want the bells and whistles that kind of go along with a printer. And so these are IoT devices. So really what we're talking about today is, once again, IoT security. And to me, there's not really that much of a difference between IoT security and computer security, because IoTs are just mini computers. And I know that there's somebody out there
rolling their eyes right now. You're going to get hate mail.
I'm going to get hate mail. Someone's going to say, you're completely wrong. IoT is this and that. But for our purposes that we're talking about right now, and really the best way to think about them is that they are mini computers on your system, on your network. Because if you think about it and approach it from that way, then you'll include them in your cyber maturity. You'll include them in your defense in depth. You'll include them in your firewall rules. You'll just include them. It'll just be in your brain that that's what these things are. You can argue the fact, well, okay, then aren't, you know, home routers then IoT devices? Kind of. Yeah.
Yes. You
know, we've got to have some kind of demarcation, obviously, for what constitutes an IoT device versus a network appliance versus an actual computer. But again, we're talking about all the same stuff. We're talking about services with open ports and operating systems that, if hacked, if accessed, and if persistence exists, then they literally have a computer. They being a nefarious actor literally has a computer or device on your network that they can launch attacks from or monitor a different network.
Well, and it's interesting too, Dustin, because you mentioned two things that I think kind of really are unique there, right? Because when you look, I'll say First off, when you look at some of these big, huge attacks, which we're not going to talk about Colonial Pipeline today, but we may talk about it in the future, the hack that happened there was an exchange security, right? That definitely doesn't fall in the IoT kind of realm, right? That's regular traditional computers, of which there's patches, right? The patch exists. They just, you know, it wasn't there. Now, I'm not saying anything about their patch management process or procedure, and we could make a whole episode on that one. But
next week
About all the hacks and attacks that are making the headlines now. And those are just like the regular computers, right? Those are the regular computers. That's what you're seeing there. IoT is so much less secure and is so intentionally or not ignored, right? That there's some of the most successful ways to have persistence on a network. I love that and this brings me to my second point. And for those, when we're saying the term persistence, for those of you who may not be familiar with the term, we mean having a consistent presence on a system that you have compromised so that you can pull data from that network and the computers attached to it. That's what we mean by persistence. Where if you perform a hack and it's one thing and a done thing and so forth, that's not persistence because, boop, it's over, right? So that's what we mean by that. And what we mean, and when you talk about valuable places, I don't know if you experienced this as much in your career, Dustin, but I bet you probably have. Throughout our experience conducting things like penetration tests and conducting operations and so forth, the most valuable thing you could compromise 9 times out of 10 would be that router, that gateway, that main gateway. Because if you could control that gateway and everything that comes to it and out it, man, you've got the keys to the kingdom, as long as you're conducting a successful man in the middle or other, you know, encryption-based attack as well at the same time, so you could read it. But you can, at a minimum, control the flow of traffic, control in and out and so forth. And if you have really pervasive access and you are conducting something successful, you can then read everything that goes in and out and even change it and forge it. It's one of the, if not most powerful points to own on network.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to your point about how IoT devices are, they're kind of made, the psychology behind them is they're kind of made to set and forget, right? You have this device that you plug into your network to control something in your house, in your office, whatever, that's supposed to provide what they call in the psychology biz, cognitive offloading, right? So I actually wrote an article about this where I likened IoT devices to dogs and the domestication of dogs for the human race. So there are some historians out there, anthropologists who believe that because we train dogs to kind of be our companions, we were able to get more sleep, and thus our brains were able to develop a little bit better and a little bit stronger and a little bit faster. Plus the dogs helped us hunt to get more protein, which helped us. So all these kinds of things that kind of, so I kind of did this likening of IoT devices to that. So it's like, okay, what's the next human evolution? Our brain's going to get even bigger now because of IoT devices.
I 100% agree with that. Dogs are amazing. And I love my dogs. As you know, you've met them. Yes. I am probably much more efficient in life because I got Ewok helping me out every day.
There you go.
I mean, I got to tell you.
Your brain's growing. It's just,
we have dogs to thanks for computers. There we go. there's the headline. Right.
So, but because we have this cognitive offloading, guess what we do? We offload our cognitive thinking thing. So like we not only forget about the task that we set the IoT device to do, we also forget about the IoT device itself. Whereas a dog is always there and it needs to be fed, IoT devices, not so much. What we forget about it because the IoT device doesn't yell at us or bark at us or, you know, whatever, right? So we have this now, this new responsibility. We have these new domesticated animals, right? We've kind of domesticated the electron, if you will, at this point in human evolution. And so we need to remember that these devices, while they are there to make our lives easier, they still need attention and they need care. Patch management, right? That's speaking of the pipeline, right? We have all these things and we know we need to do them. We just have, again, other things that kind of pop up in our lives and we forget, and we have all these new devices and these new projects and everything else that's going on. And so we tend to forget those things.
And one other thing that's a unique variable here is in many instances, we can't. So let's go back to that printer, right? No firmware updates since 2013. No updates to this thing. So yeah, I want to love this printer. That might be a lie. I don't even want to love it, right? But I want to have it secure. Yeah, right. I want to call it friend as it sits down here and glows at me with its one blinking light. I want it to. It's a very functional printer most of the time. But if I don't have the tools to, I'm not going to sit here and like try and code my own firmware update for this device in order to keep it going on and on. And I mean, it's just that, and I think that's where you see the pervasiveness of this unintentional, you know, kind of neglect, right? Because IoT is such a fast moving sector. Everything needs to be made smart now, hurry, go, right? That functionality really is being prized above security. I mean, gosh, Dustin, phones. Like now you buy a phone and they're like, it'll be secure for maybe 2 or 3 years. And then you're lucky if you get 18 months out of it. I'm not going to point any fingers at your phone making company that's in your pocket, but they have done that, right?
Yes.
And those are probably the most important IoT points if you're talking about privacy and security and so forth. I'm just going to try to do the best I can and feed it and water it, shove kibble in the print tray now and just press print and just, it'll either work or it'll die faster. So there we go.
If it starts barking at you and wagging its USB cable, I would,
yeah,
I would call a priest maybe. I don't even know who you'd call.
I mean, there's this green, like, I thought it was tree sap, but now it seems like slime coming out of it. I don't know.
It's ectoplasm. It's fine. It's possessed.
It's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Enough about possessed IoT devices. You bring up a really good point in that we don't, specifically with IoT devices, we don't have control of those devices. We usually don't have administrative rights to those devices or administrative rights to the underlying operating system or chipset or whatever you want to call it. But and we're not thinking about those things. But you know who is? Hackers, right? People, yeah, who want to gain control of something and want to find that in, they're going to do as much studying they can on the RS-232 port that's on the back of Frank's printer, because they're going to go and hack something, and that's how they're going to, that's their in, right? Now it's physical, it's not, it's got to be, that's physical security, right? So they actually have to be able to get in, but they can. If they can find a way to get into Frank's printer via the internet or via the other services, or exploit a vulnerability that way, then they'll do that, because that's a lot easier and a lot cheaper, and you don't have to worry about physical security at that point, right? But while they're sitting there figuring these out, we've had this set and forget mentality, and then go ahead and bring in, like Frank mentioned, end of life, right? Okay, so yep. This product is now end of life. Not even the manufacturer supports it anymore. So what do we do with it? And that's where defense in depth comes into play. And you could say zero trust, and you can say cyber maturity. There's lots of different things that we can do to mitigate the risk, but the risk is still there. It hasn't gone anywhere. All we can do from here on out is just, again, apply different styles or different types of cybersecurity controls on top of it.
I agree. And I like that you brought up physical access too, because it's really hard for a company to update a physical security flaw after millions of people have purchased their devices. I think you can still, it's a Gen 2. Yeah, a Gen 2 Nest thermostat upstairs. I think you still can just plug in a USB drive. I hope maybe they figured out a way to roll out a fix over the OTA, right? But like you could, I saw the hack performed. It took 15 to 20 seconds of physical access to shove a USB drive right up in the port. And if I remember this correctly, it just shoved a whole new image onto it. And then there you go. You had a hacked image. And you would never, I'm not checking my Nest to be like, oh yeah, is this thing hacked? I don't know, right? I mean, certainly if I'm looking at it. Now I do monitor my traffic, but you know, it's from
Google. Hold on a second. So. You don't run an MD5 checksum on all of your, or SHA-1 checksum on all the firmware you ever download. Man, you are.
What am I even doing in this field? What's wrong? Get out.
None of us do that, right? Like no. It's we all need to, we all should. That's why it's there. But for some reason we all just ignore all of that. And it is hard to do. It is one of those things where it's like, I don't have time to go through and make sure that the over-the-air upgrade is secure, right?
It's happening, yeah. So, if they even tell us it's happening, by the
way. Right.
There's a whole nother ball of wax right there.
Absolutely. And most manufacturers have that check built into it now, where it's like downloading the firmware, checking the integrity of the firmware. Okay, but then of course we have our SolarWinds types attacks that actually get into the supply chain of that whole thing, and then it's like, is this okay? You just downloaded this. Is this the right one? Yeah, it's the right one.
Yeah, it looks good to me.
Server said so, and so it starts installing it, right? And then all of a sudden there's a back door in there. And that was a very sophisticated attack. What we're talking about can be done very. I don't want to say unsophisticatedly, but it's not necessarily
requires most- a little less finesse.
Yeah, there you go. Requires a little less finesse, but it still is possible, right? And so, again, I know that this is ad nauseum at this point for both of us, but this is where encouraging a culture of cybersecurity within your enterprise will not only help secure your enterprise's networks, but hopefully will also be able to change the psychology of our end users so that they're also thinking about it when they go home, right? So Frank, your kids' friends come over. Hey, can we connect to the network? Yeah, we have a guest network. You can connect to that one instead, right? Because now
also I tell them no.
Right? And having this segment
showing up being like, can I connect to your internet? I'll be like, no way.
When your kid, well, yeah. I don't know. What, you know, are you trying to tell me that your son doesn't have like some kind of device that connects to the internet?
Oh, he's got tons of them, bro. He's got that Caterpillar on top of it all. And I'm like, I don't know what this guy's doing, but it's a neat Caterpillar looking thing. And did he just code that? I don't know. You're right. You're right. And you're 100% correct. I do have that one other network for all the things where I'm like, I don't think so. You're going to go to the 802.11g network.
Right.
You can live there.
And the really cool thing about these routers, the new routers that are coming out, is most of them will have that secondary network for you already set up. So you really don't, there's not too much, a casual user configuration that needs to go into it. The person can plug it in, name it, and there's the name of their SSID or the name of their wireless network, and then the name of their wireless network - guest or something like that. So that's always a good thing. So again, I think here the solution comes down to practicing what we preach, right? And to creating a culture of cybersecurity within our enterprises that hopefully bleeds down into an user's personal life. Defense in depth. What else am I missing here, Frank?
I love that. And personal life. I like the way you brought that up. Yeah, it's you know, one of the biggest markets right now is awareness training, and it's always crazy to see people who will have one completely different mindset at home compared to what they have at work.
And that's another thing too, is to take advantage of those capabilities when we're given them by our personal vendors, right? So if Gmail or Google or whomever, or Apple, if they have that two-factor hardware authentication YubiKey possibility, then take advantage of it, right? YubiKeys cost money. They're like $50, right? But at the same time, I do have a little bit more peace of mind when it comes to access or lack thereof.
at a minimum, using MFA through something like Authy or Google is just, I mean, even at a bare minimum, that is better than nothing. So take these things that you're learning at work and that you're requiring at work and see how they fit into your daily life as well. Now, that doesn't mean you have to sit down and write up a patch management policy for your home use before everyone can agree to, before they can connect to your wireless and so forth, because my wife will not agree to that, and she lives here with me and I love her. So no no in-depth patch management policy for her. But it does mean be a little more thoughtful. But also, I'll tell you this, don't beat yourself up when you find an error, and just address it when you can. And honestly, in this instance of this printer, I'm just glad I found it. There's, you know, probably a lot of things at your house that aren't working the way they should, and you'll never know about it.
Thank you for joining us today for this episode with our cyber pros, Dustin and Frank. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To listen to more podcasts from Isoca, please visit isoca.org/podcast. Don't forget to subscribe for upcoming episodes.